topic for today's shiur is the mitzvah of tefillin. There is a major dispute among the Rishonim regarding the mitzvah of tefillin, whether it's considered one mitzvah or two mitzvahs. The Rambam counts tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh as two distinct mitzvahs. And the reason that he gives in the Sefer Mitzvahs is because they're not me'akvim zeh zeh. Mishneh Menachos says that if you only have a shel yad, or if you only have a shel rosh, you put on that tefillah that you have. And the one is not me'akiv the other. So the Rambam considers this the klal, that whenever different parts of a mitzvah me'akvim zeh zeh, let's say dalaminim shebelulav me'akvim zeh zeh, so the Rambam says that's an indication that it's one mitzvah. But tefillin shel yad, tefillin shel rosh, not me'akvim zeh zeh, that's an indication that they're two distinct mitzvahs. Other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam, and they write, listing off in the minyan of mitzvahs, trying to ascertain which are the 613 mitzvahs. The Gemara says in the end of Makkos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us 613 mitzvahs, and Midrashim add on the 248 are mitzvahs sesei, 365 are mitzvahs loy sesei. So the other Rishonim disagree, and they think that tefillin counts as one mitzvah. What's the connection between one and the other? If the Mishnah says they're not miyakim zeh zeh, so the answer is it's not exactly so that they're not related whatsoever. The halacha says, learn that from Pesukim in the Chumash. It's a din min haTorah. You have to first put on the shol yad, and then put on the shol rosh. You have to first put on the shol yad, and then put on the shol rosh. So you see, the Seder is not miyakim. If you put on the shol rosh first, even if you put on the shel rosh, you don't have the shel yad, so you yotze the shel rosh. But lachatchila, there is a seder. So from the fact that there is a seder, that indicates there is a relationship, there is a connection. So this leads other Rishonim to insist that it's really one mitzvah. The Rambam doesn't think that that demonstrates anything, because he himself quotes in the opening section, Hilchas Melachim, the Rambam quotes a passage from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chof and Beis, where the Gemara says, Gimel mitzvahs, Nitztava Yisrael b'chnisasim l'oretz, when the Jewish nation entered Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, they became obligated to observe three mitzvahs in a specific order. And the Gemara says, Gimel mitzvahs, three different mitzvahs. And the Rambam says these are counted as three different mitzvahs in the minyan of mitzvahs. The first mitzvah is l'hamid l'hamelech, to establish a Jewish government over all of Eretz Yisrael. Second mitzvah is l'hachra zarish al amolek, to wipe out amolek. You have to have a Jewish government sponsoring a Jewish army in order to have the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek. Amalek is not a chayvus hayochid. When I'm walking down the street and I bump into an Amaleki, there's no mitzvah to kill the Amalek. It's only when the Jewish people has a government in Eretz Yisrael that's sponsoring a Jewish army, so then it's a mitzvah, so chayvus hatzibur on that army to wipe out Amalek. And after you wipe out Amalek, then the third mitzvah is livnas lehem beis abchira, to build the beis hamikdosh. And the Gemara says that is the Seder in which he's supposed to fulfill the mitzvah. So there is a relationship between mitzvah A, B, and C. It's supposed to be fulfilled in a specific order, but still the Gemara says explicitly, Gimel mitzvahs, the three distinct mitzvahs. So just because there is a Seder here, that we learn out from the Pesukim, Kosman Shebein Enecha Yushtayim, you're first supposed to put on the Shal Yad, and only afterward, whenever you have both, first you have to put on the Shal Yad, then put on the Shal Rosh. So the Rambam thinks they're two distinct mitzvahs. The fact that there's a Seder doesn't necessarily indicate that it's one mitzvah. You have the three mitzvahs about establishing a government in Eretz Yisrael, wiping out Amalek and building based on Megdush. There is a Seder there too, but still the Braisa says that there are three distinct mitzvahs. What's the big difference? Whether it's counted as one mitzvah, counted as two mitzvahs. So the Rishonim discuss how many brachas do you recite. When they put on Tefillin Shel Yad, you say a bracha, Oyvel Asiyasam. Immediately before you put on the tefillin, the Gemara says tefillin be'emasai mevarach aleim. The Gemara Menachos discusses when exactly do you recite the bracha. So the Gemara says kol ha-mitzvus kula mevarach aleim oivel asiyosim. The bracha is supposed to be recited immediately before performing the mitzvah, and immediately before oivel means not, doesn't say kodim. It says oivel. Oivel means immediately before, as opposed to over the over. You're not supposed to say, as you're taking out the tefillin from the tefillin zekel, or as you're putting on the bais on your arm, you don't say the bracha. The Gemara says, when do you say the bracha? Mishas hanocha ad shas kshira. From the time after you put the tefillin in the proper location, before you tighten the ritzua, that's when you say the bracha. That's the over lasi aspi. So one bracha is recited before you put on the shal yad. The question is it one? Is the shal rosh part of the same mitzvah? If you have one without the other, so you mekayim half a mitzvah. If you have both, you mekayim the mitzvah b'shleimusa. So if it's one mitzvah, it makes sense that it should only have one bracha. If it's two mitzvahs, maybe it makes sense that it should have two distinct brachas. So there is a gemara in the end of Maseches Brachas, and the gemara lists off all the brachas hashachar, all the 15 brachas hashachar that we have in the Siddur on one page. So in the days of the Tanaim, they didn't say it like that. They didn't go to shul and recite all the 15 brachas. When they heard the rooster crow, so they said the bracha Shanas Maseches Vinal Hachem Yem Veiloilo. Then they, when they saw the other things, when they started to walk around, they said that bracha. When they got dressed, they said the other bracha. Put on a hat on their head, they said and so on. Every bracha they said when it happened. So the Gemara lists off all the brachas. Then the Gemara says, when you put on the tefillin shal yad, you say a bracha, and you shouldn't talk in between the tefillin shal yad and the tefillin shal rosh. If soch mevorach shtayim, if you talk in between shal yad and shal rosh, then you have to say two brachas. Loy soch, if you didn't talk, then mevorach achas, you only say one bracha. So what does that mean? So that Gemara, towards the very end of Maseches Brachas, there's a machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. So Rashi's opinion is that if lo yisach, you didn't talk in between the shal yad and the shal rosh, only one bracha is recited. Say the bracha l'haniach tefillin, and that bracha covers the shal yad and the shal rosh. In the event that the person spoke in between shal yad and shal rosh, so if you're mafsik, so the bracha that he said before the shal yad doesn't relate to the shal rosh, then he has to say an additional bracha. But if lo yisach, if he doesn't talk in between, only one bracha is recited. Rabbi in the top. The Rambam learns the same as Rashi. If you didn't talk in between the Shal Yad and Shal Rosh, you only say one bracha, laniach tefillin, and that bracha covers the Shal Yad and the Shal Rosh. Tosfos quotes Rabbi Natam, who disagrees, and says, no, you always have to say a separate bracha on the Shal Yad and a separate bracha on Shal Rosh. What the Gemara means to say is that if lo yisach, if you didn't talk in between the Shal Yad and the Shal Rosh, mevorach achas, you only say one bracha on the Shal Rosh. You only say al mitzvah tefillin. When you're about to tighten the shal rosh should be on your head, before you tighten it, if you say the bracha al mitzvah tefillin before you put it on your head, then it's over the oiv. When you put the tefillin on your head before you tighten it, that's over lasiyos immediately before you fulfill the mitzvah. So if loisach, if the person didn't talk in between shal yad and shal rosh, mevorach achas, he only says one bracha on the shal rosh. If soch, if he talks in between shal yad and shal rosh, then he has to say two brachas before he puts on the shal rosh. Two brachas on the shal rosh. That's a totally different pshat. That's a pella. Whoever heard of saying two brachas on one mitzvah? We understand why the Rabbi Natam holds that you always say one bracha on shal yad, one bracha on shal rosh. Okay, he thinks shal yad and shal rosh are two different mitzvahs. Say a bracha on the shal yad is one mitzvah, say a bracha on shal rosh is another mitzvah. But if he talks in between the shal yad and shal rosh, then he has to say two brachas on the shal rosh. That's the accepted opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. That's on most of the Ashkenazim follow that opinion. Why in the world should you say two brachas when you put on shal rosh? The Gemara in the last daf in Masech HaShabbos has 24 prokim. The commentaries on the Mishnahs point out that in the days of Tanakh, a kala would dress up for the wedding and would wear 24 tachshitim, based on psukim and yecheskel like that. I don't know exactly where there's room to put the 10 fingers, the 10 rings, okay? Then you have a nose ring, then you have two earrings. So that's 10, 11, 12, 13. Where else is there room to put things? I don't know. A crown? 14, I don't know. Bracelets? Okay. Foot bracelet. Okay, whatever. They used to wear 24 tachshit. So kala, the Shabbos is referred to in the Gemara as a kala. So they say Rabbi Yudan Nasi wanted to dress up Shabbos HaKala with 24 tachshitim. So he made he rigged it, and he made Masech Shabbos with 24 prokim. He could have made it 30 prokim. You have a nezikin, it's 30 prokim. Baba Kama, Baba Mitzia, Baba Basra is one big nesifta, and it's 30 prokim altogether. Baba Kama, each one has 10 prokim. Maseches Kalim is also like that. Yeah, Baba Kama, Baba Mitzia, Baba Basra, and Kalim, and altogether it's 30 prokim. So why did he make Maseches Shabbos 24 such an odd number? So the commentaries on the Mishnah is right. They're guessing. They think because he wanted to treat Shabbos as a kala, because the Gemara refers to Shabbos as a kala. And the kala in the days of Tanakh wore 24 tachshitim. So he made 24 prokim in Mishnah's kala. So one of the, in Mishnah's Shabbos. So one of the prokim in Masechah Shabbos is Perak HaBlezer de Milo. About what's the din if you have a bismila bismana is Dechah Shabbos. If the milah shalai bismana, you're not allowed to be Dechah Shabbos. So the perek, most of the perek doesn't really have to do with Hilchos Shabbos. Most of the perek gives you all the detail halachas of Bris Milah. It doesn't really belong in Masechet Shabbos. Just one or two Mishnayos belong there. But he wanted to make 24 prakim. So one whole perek is dedicated to the laws of Bris Milah in general and to the laws of Bris Milah on Shabbos in particular. So in the very last daf in the Gemara, in the Mishnayos it doesn't happen. The very last daf in the Gemara quotes a brisa. What brachas are recited when you perform a bris milah? So the Gemara says two brachas are recited. This morning I attended a bris. One of the rebbes in yeshiva made a bris. So you say two brachas. You say the moel says a bracha shekadishana b'mitzvos v'mitzivano ala milah. Then the father of the baby says a shekadishana b'mitzvos v'mitzivano lahachnisa b'brisoi shel Avraham Avinu. Then after the bris you say a third bracha shekidah she did mibetin. So the Tosfos Rid in his commentary on the last Amud. And Perek HaBlezen Nemila raises this question, where do you find a mitzvah, it's one mitzvah of Mila, that you recite two brachas? Very strange. So the same question he raises on the Gemara, why we all, everybody says two brachas on the Bris Mila, everybody raises on the Rabbeinu Tam, that if a person spoke in between Shal Yad and Shal Rosh, Mevorach Shtayim, he says two brachas before he puts on the Shal Rosh. Why should you say two brachas on one mitzvah? Why the Rabbeinu Tam thinks he said bracha even if lo soch, he didn't talk in between Shal Yad and Shal Rosh. He says separate bracha and the Shal Yad, separate bracha and Shal Rosh. All right, the Rabbeinu Tam thinks the two mitzvahs that we understand. But if soch, if you spoke in between Shal Yad and Shal Rosh, you should say two brachas on the Shal Rosh. Why should you say two brachas on the Shal Rosh? It's one mitzvah. So whatever the answer will be by the Bris Milah, he may be able to give the same answer over here by Tefillin Shal Rosh. So Rav Soloveitchik was fond of giving his explanation that runs as follows. He said, usually when a person shakes a lulav, when a person puts a mezuzah on the door, when a person eats matzah on Pesach night, it doesn't change the person. Before and after, he was a Jewish person, and now he fulfilled the mitzvah. By Bris Milah, there's a major change in the person. Before the person has the Bris Milah performed on his body, he's not permitted to eat a korban Pesach, or if he's a Kohen, he's not permitted to eat Truma. Or he's not permitted to be makor karbonis in the Beis Hamikdash. Kohen Oral, the pasuk in Yecheskel, Kohen Oral is not permitted to be makor karbonis in the Beis Hamikdash. After he has the Bris Milah performed on his body, not only has he fulfilled the mitzvah, it accomplishes a change in personal status. He's no longer an Oral, now he's considered a mohu. So Rav Soloveitchik thought perhaps that's what the Gemara is driving at. When you perform a Bris Milah on a baby, you recite two brachas. One bracha is over the Maisa Mitzvah, Oivel Asiyosam, Asher Kedushan B'mitzvos B'tzivonu Ala Milah. That bracha is recited by the Moel, because he performs the Maisa Mitzvah. And then the Avi Aben, the Brisa says, the Avi Aben recites a bracha, Asher Kedushan B'mitzvos B'tzivonu Lachnis B'risa Shalavram Avinu. It means that the status of the child is now changed. This child is not considered a mohul, he's no longer considered oral. And a certain halach has changed. From now on, he's permitted to eat korban Pesach, and if he's a kohen, he's permitted to eat truma and to be makor karbonis and so on. So perhaps the same is true regarding tefillin. The Rambam writes in the very last paragraph in Hilchas Tefillin that when a person wears tefillin, it accomplishes a change on him. When a person wears tefillin, he's going to be more serious, he's going to act in a fashion with more Yirah Shamayim. Apparently, wearing the tefillin is mekadesh, the person's body, while the tefillin are on. That's why there's a special din, that one, when he wears tefillin, there's not a lot of mesiach das from the tefillin. He's not allowed to keep it around. He has to act in a serious fashion. So Rav Soloveitchik thought, perhaps that's the shot by tefillin as well. Two brachas are recited, one bracha on the Maisa HaMitzvah, like whenever you put a mezuzah on the door, whenever you eat matzah, whenever you sit in sukkah, whenever you perform Puran HaTalis, whenever one performs any mitzvah, even though it doesn't leave any roishem on the person, it doesn't change the person as a human being, a bracha is recited in connection with the Maisa HaMitzvah. And then the second bracha is recited on tefillin because it accomplishes Kiddush HaGavra. It accomplishes a change in the person. So perhaps this is what the Rabbeinu Tam is driving at. Why two brachas are recited? If soch, if you spoke in between Shal Yad and Shal Rosh, two brachas are recited over the Shal Rosh. If lo soch, if a person didn't talk in between Shal Yad and Shal Rosh, also basically he's saying two brachas on the Shal Rosh. But the bracha that he said, l'haniach tefillin, carries over. If lo soch, if he wasn't mafsik, so that bracha carries over to the Shal Rosh as well. The one bracha said on the Shal Yad carries over to the Shal Rosh. And when he says al mitzvah tefillin, he really saying two brachas on the shorosh. L'aniach that he said before, And the Al-Mitzah still in that he says now. Rashi and the Rambam hold, not like the Rabbi Tam, they hold that's what the many follow, the Sfardim follow, the Shittas HaRambam, and the Vilna Gaon thinks that that's more correct, so that many Ashkenazim also follow the Vilna Gaon, that they follow Rashi. They only say one bracha, they say the bracha on the Shal Yad, and if they don't talk, Lo Yisach, that's it. Mevorach Achaz only say one bracha. If Sach, then you say Al Nitzas Tfilin on the Shal Rosh. Does this necessarily indicate, because you only say one bracha, does this necessarily indicate that it's one mitzvah? It can't be so. The Rambam is the one who says you only say one bracha, and the Rambam is the one who counts Tfilin Shal Yad and Shal Rosh as two distinct brachas, as two distinct mitzvahs. So if the, according to the Rambam, the two different mitzvahs, how come you only say one bracha on the Shal Yad, and it covers both the Shal Yad and the Shal Rosh? So the commentaries on the Noisei Kelim on the Rambam, the Migdalois, quotes a Tosefta, that this is not a problem. The Tosefta gives the following example. Let's say a farmer is about to be mafrish bikurim. Bikurim ya mafrish when it's still attached to the ground. And it happens that he's in the middle of baking and he mixed flour with water and he has to be mafrish challah. And he also happens to have bushels of grain and he has to be mafrish truma. He's mafrish truma. And he's also, he has ma'aser rishon and he wants to be mafrish ma'aser min ha'ma'aser, which is also given to the kohen. So he's going to do four hafroshes, one after the other, after the other, after the other, and all four have the same status. They're all truma. Bikurim has the status of truma. Challah has the status of truma. Truma is truma. And ma'aser min ha'ma'aser, when you give ma'aser to the Levi, then you take out 10% of that. That's called truma's ma'aser. Ma'aser min ha'ma'aser, give that to the kohen. All four have the same status as truma. There is a Mishnah in Me'ilah where the Mishnah says that we only give malchus to a person who eats non-kosher food if he ate a kazayis. If one ate less than a kazayis of non-kosher food, it's only chatzishir. Chatzishir is awesome in Atar, but there's no malchus. That's a machlekes hatanai. One Tana says there is malchus, Reb Shimon. In the Mishnah and Makkos is of the opinion that one who eats even less than a kazayis of non-kosher food is also like, and Reb Shimon's opinion was not accepted. He was often outvoted. Shimon is the author of the Zohar, so he often has unusual opinions, and most of the time he has been outvoted. So his opinion also, we paskin on a chatzi shir, there's an isam and atar, but there's no malchus. So let's say if a person eats a chatzi shir, a half a kazayis of chazir, and a half a kazayis of basa b'cholov. So he ate a full kazayis of non-kosher food, but the two different kinds of non-kosher food. So that's a machloikis hatanoim. Rav Meir's opinion is that he's surim mitzar from zeh mzeh. If he ate a kazayis of non-kosher food, even though it's not a full kazayis of one treifus, half a kazayis of chazer, half a kazayis of basa b'cholov, so Rav Meir's opinion is that you get malchus, and we don't accept Rav Meir's opinion. We paskin that you only get malchus if you ate a full kazayis of one iser. So the Mishnah Me'ilah says, what if a non-kohen eats a kazayis of truma, he eats a quarter of a kazayis of bikurim, a quarter of a kazayis of chala, a quarter of a kazayis of truma, and a quarter of a kazayis of truma's ma'aser, ma'aser min ha'ma'aser. So the Mishnah says that that's all shem echad, that's mamash truma, and the non-kohen who ate this kazayis of truma will be loike, because it's all shem echad. So the Tosefta and Brachas gives this din. If a farmer is about to be mafrish bikurim, and then right after the bikurim is going to be mafrish samchala, then it's going to be mafrish truma gedoyla, then it's going to be mafrish ma'aser min ha'ma'aser. So the Tosefta says all he has to say is one bracha, shekadishana b'mitzosu b'tzivano, Allah frashas truma, because all four are truma. There are clearly four distinct mitzvahs. To set aside bikurim is one mitzvah, and to set aside truma is a separate mitzvah, to set aside challah is a third mitzvah, and to set aside ma'aser min ha'ma'aser is a fourth mitzvah. But since it's all covered with the same nusach habracha, asher kedishanu b'mitzvah b'tzivano, Allah frashas truma, so you can cover many mitzvahs with one bracha. So that's the Rambam's opinion, is that shal yad and shal rosh are clearly two distinct mitzvahs. He counts this in the sefer mitzvahs. As two mitzvahs, he says, they're not miyakim zeh, so that's the indication that they're two distinct mitzvahs. But still, you can cover both with one bracha, because they're both tefillin. You know, let's say if a person is about to put on his talis and his tefillin, so there's one opinion in the Gemara, in the Tanoim, that he says one bracha, asher kedushanu b'mitzvahs b'tzivanu, lishma mitzvaysav. So we don't accept that opinion. You've got to say a separate bracha mefuretes, lehisate b'tzitzis, and a separate bracha mefuretes, lehaniach tefillin. But if he's putting on two tefillins, putting on a shal yada and a shal rosh, so they're both called tefillin. So you can cover two mitzvahs with one bracha. Why not? They're two distinct mitzvahs, but it can cover the both mitzvahs with one bracha. So the Rambam's opinion is that the Tefillin Shal Yad and Shal Rosh are two distinct mitzvahs, but you can still cover both with one bracha. In Shulchan Aruch they mention a minhag that those who do recite, those who follow the Rabbi Natan, most of the Ashkenazim follow the Rabbi Natan, that's what the Ramah quotes, that they say a bracha before they tighten the Shal Yad on Yech Tefillin, then they say a bracha before they tighten the Shal Rosh on Mitzvahs Tefillin, and then after they tighten the Shal Rosh, then they whisper softly, Baruch Shem Kvei Malchus Aliyon Avoy. What is that all about? So this is based on the passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Whenever one, by mistake, recites a bracha levatola, so he was Moitzei Shem Shamayim levatola. He said Shem Hashem unnecessarily. He had no right to mention Shem Hashem. So in order to be misakein that other, the bracha levatola, he violated an aver. What can you do? But in addition to bracha levatola, he also recited Moitzei Shem Shamayim levatola. So in order to be misakein that iser, so the Yerushalmi recommends, let him mention Baruch Shem Kvoy Malchus Aliyon, but let him mention a Shevach, let him praise the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that will remove the prohibition of Motzi Shem Shamayim Lo'atol. The fact that he said the Shem Shamayim in the context of a Baruch, let's say, he says, Baruch HaTor Shem Lekan Macham Sha'akol Niyeh B'dvoro. So he said a praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God created everything in the whole wide world. But that praise was improper. That was a Baruch Lo'atol, he had no right to say that. So not only has he violated bracha levatola, he has violated shem shemaim levatola. Why is it levatola? But he said a shevach. No, that shevach is not acceptable. He wasn't permitted to say that shevach. That was a bracha levatola. So if now he says baruch shem kvei machus aliyavod, he praises the name of God. So this will remove the prohibition of motzi shem shemaim levatola. It won't remove the prohibition. It won't undo the avera of bracha levatola. But at least it'll undo the avera of motzi shem shemaim levatola. That's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. Whenever one realizes that he just mistakenly recited a bracha levatola, he should whisper softly, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Aliyon Vod. Blessed be the name of God. So our minhag is to be choshesh, even the Ashkenazim who do recite a separate bracha on Shal Yad, a separate bracha on Shal Rosh, but we all know that Rashi and the Rambam hold that you weren't supposed to say that separate bracha on the Shal Rosh, because Lo Yisach Mevarach Achas, you only say the one bracha on Yech Tefillin. So, according to Rashi and the Rambam, the second bracha that we said on Mitzvah Tefillin was really a bracha lematola. That's why the minhag developed that we whisper softly Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Aliyon Vod to be choshesh for Shitas Rashi. Maybe the second bracha on Mitzvah Tefillin was a bracha lematola. So, therefore, we recite that Shevach Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Aliyon Vod. The Gemara learns out from Psukim that the tefillin have to be written by a man. Tefillin written by a woman are posel. Not only tefillin written by women are not obligated in the mitzvah of tefillin. So whoever is not mechuyev b'davar, we could have perhaps thought on our own as posel for writing tefillin.
Is that also for mezuzah?
The Gemara says even mezuzah, even though the women are mechuyev in mezuzah, a woman is posel to write her own mezuzah. Megillah says there is a machloikis. Because the Megillah says, Vatichtev Esther is called Divrei HaTorah Hazot. So they say, it sounds like Esther herself wrote the Megillah. So Megillah says there is a machloikis. But if a woman writes a Sefer Torah, Tefillin a Mezuzah, so the Gemara has a Bryson Gittin, Daf Mem Hem, based that it's possible. That it's not acceptable. Based on the Psukim in Kriyashma, that it says, Ukshartim lo sal yadecho, Ukhsaftim al Mezuzahs beisecho bisharech, one pasuk next to the other. So that's called smuchim. When you have one pasuk next to the other, that's smuchim. When you have two dinim in the same pasuk, that's called a hekesh. And everybody darshan's a hekesh. All the Tanaim agree, if you have two dinim written in the same pasuk, there must be some connection between the two dinim. What if you have two dinim written in two adjacent psukim? So that's a dispute in the Tanaim, in the beginning of Yevamos. And the accepted opinion is that only in Chumash Dvarim we darshan smuchim. The other four chumashim, we don't darshan smuchim.
What's an example then?
There are many, many dinim that are based on smuchim. Many, many famous dinim. Take, for example, how do we decide who gets malchus? So the pasuk says, V'hayom bin hakos ha-rosha. If someone is a rosha, so Bezin gives him malchus. So who's a rosha? So the Gemara says, that pasuk, V'hitztiklas ha-tzarek ha-yeshivus ha-rosha, V'hayom bin hakos ha-rosha, that we give him malchus, that pasuk is written right next to the pasuk of Losachsim Shor B'dishoy. So the Gemara, all the Tanoim say, that's what determines. If one violates an aver that dumya de lav de chasima, similar to la saksim shor b'dishoy, then he gets malchus. If the aver is not similar to losafsam shabadisha, there's no malchus. But the Gemara has many, 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 many drushes on chumash dvarim based on smuchim, one pasuk next to the other. So this is one of the many drushes. Then in Kriya Shema it says, Ukshaitim los al yadecho. The next pasuk says, Vachsavtim al mezuzas beisecho abishorecho. So the Tanoim darshan smuchim, only one who is mechuyev to put on tefillin and observes it, Jewish men are mechuyev and they put on tefillin. Acheru shoyte v'kotna not mechuyev, a non-Jew is not mechuyev, a Jewish woman is not mechuyev to put on tefillin. So these people who are not obligated, or let's say there is a person who is mechuyev to put on tefillin, and he doesn't, a Jewish person is not observant, doesn't put on tefillin. So then he's possible even for writing mezuzah, even the mitzvah mezuzah he does observe. But if he doesn't observe the mitzvah of tefillin, so then he's possible for writing a mezuzah. So would you say that a woman is possible for nailing the mezuzah on the door also? A man wrote the mezuzah and the woman buys it in the store, now she a single girl. She has to get a man to put up the mezuzah? Or you say no. The psula of women writing a mezuzah is only on the writing. It doesn't apply to fulfilling the mitzvah. Putting it on the door, that's the mitzvah, that's not the preparation of the object. So that's a machlokes. The overwhelming majority of the poskim are of the opinion that is acceptable. A woman can nail up the mezuzah. There's a very minority view that a woman cannot even nail a mezuzah on her own door. She has to get a man to put the mezuzah. But that's not the accepted opinion. See, with respect to tefillin also, the din is that a woman cannot write the tefillin. What if a male sofer wrote the tefillin? And now, let's say, this happens a lot. A man is never sick, he had a stroke, he's sick in the hospital, whatever, and he has to get his wife or his daughter to help him put on the tefillin. So would that be possible? He's not yet to the mitzvah, because just like a woman cannot write the tefillin, so a woman cannot put the hanochas ha-tefillin. So the pashtus is, just like we assume that a woman can put the mezuzah on her own door, or on someone else's door, so a woman can put the tefillin on my arm. The only pashtus of the woman, can't write the tefillin, or the woman can't sew up the tefillin, the Rambam says. The tikkun asiyas ha-tefillin. But putting the tefillin on the arm, the pashtus is that she can do that mitzvah. There is such a gemara in Avodah Zarah. The gemara talks about there was a woman who married a pious religious man. So when he didn't feel well, she helped him put the tefillin on his arm. And then, whatever, she got divorced, or the first husband died. So she married a gangster. So when she married the gangster, she helped him in his line. So with the first husband, who was religious, so Hoiso Kusheris Lo Kesha Shel Tefillin. She used to help him put on the tefillin on his arm. And the second husband was a gangster, Hoiso Kusheris Lo Kesha Shel Muchsin. She used to help him tie up the sacks of money that he stole and help them drive away in the getaway car. That the wife usually helps out the husband, whatever line he's in, whether he's in a religious line or a criminal line, whatever. So the simple reading of the Gemara says, "Hoisa kesheres la kesher shel tefillin," that the wife put the tefillin on his arm. So the Maharam Shik has a tshuva. He wonders maybe we shouldn't interpret that Gemara like that. Maybe we should say that a woman is puzzled for the hanochas ha-tefillin also. That's not the generally accepted opinion. Remember, Rabbi Soloveitchik said that he once had cancer surgery. So he was so weak in the hospital, he wasn't able to put the tefillin on his own arm. But his body was clean. He used to have his wife or his daughters, they used to come. They all alternated. So when his wife, he had a son also. So when the wife and the daughters came, he didn't think that was a problem to have a woman put the tefillin on your arm. He thought that this Maram Shik didn't make any sense. He was just wondering, does it make sense that I should say a bracha, shekadishanam so subhanallah haniach tefillin, if I'm not doing the maisa hanocha? I just have the tefillin on my body. So he thought he can say the second bracha, al mitzvah tefillin. The bracha al mitzvah tefillin is over the fact that I have tefillin on my body and it's affecting a change on my body, like the second bracha on the bris milah. Lachnis bris shal avraham avinu said that's a bracha on the chalois, on the person that is now a mohu. So the second bracha on the tefillin on mitzvah tun is a bracha on the chalois that takes effect on the person. The way the Rambam writes it, the last halacha in Hilchas Tefillin, when the person has the tefillin on, his body is more mekudesh. So he, at that time, when he wasn't able to tighten the tefillin himself, he only said the bracha al mitzvah tefillin. He thought maybe it's not right, he shouldn't say the bracha lahaniach tefillin. Which has more kedusha, shal yad, shal rosh? A funny question. But the Gemara discusses everything. So the Gemara says, Tefillin Shel Rosh have a slightly higher level of Kedusha than Tefillin Shel Yad. How do you determine what has Kedusha, what doesn't have Kedusha, what has higher Kedusha, what has lower Kedusha? So the Rav Chaim Volozhiner explains in Nefesh HaChaim, what has Kedusha is determined, let's say Tzitzis is called Tashlishei Mitzvah. And Lulav and a Shofar is Tashmishei Mitzvah. How do you determine what's Tashmishei Kedusha? Only those items, only those religious articles that have Psukim written on them. Whatever has Divrei Torah. The source of Kedusha is Divrei Torah because Divrei Torah represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Divrei Torah not just a collection of dinim, it's a description of the essence of God. So that's why Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah have Kedusha. Which one of these has higher level of Kedusha? So the Rambam explains, Mezuzah only has Shema v'Hayoyim Shamoya. Tefillin has four Pashyos, Shema v'Hayoyim Shamoya plus Kadesh v'Yakiv Yakov. So Tefillin have a higher level of Kedusha than Mezuzah. Shorosh has not only Kadesh v'Yakiv Yakov, Shema v'Hayoyim Shamoya, has a Shin on the bias on the outside. So there's one letter more. Our Tefillin, we have two Shins. The Gemara doesn't say two Shins, that's in the Zohar. The Gemara sounds like they only put on one Shin on this. So we have two Shins, one on the left side, one on the right side. So because you have one or two letters more, that's why the Tefillin Shel Rosh have a slightly higher level of Kedusha than Tefillin Shel Yad. What's the big difference? Which one has a higher level of Kedusha? So the Gemara says, no, there is a din. Malam HaKodesh V'lo Maridin. It's learned that from a Pasuk in Chumash, and it's assumed to be a din deraisa. You're not permitted to take something that has a higher level of Kedusha and to use it for something that has only a lower level of Kedusha. So the Gemara says, let's say you have an old Shel Yad and you want to convert it to make it into a Shel Rosh. In the Shel Yad, you have the four parshas written. So you're going to cut them apart from each other. I used to use it as a Shel Yad. And now I want to cut the four parshas separately and put each one in a separate bias and convert the parsha Shel Yad into a Shel Rosh. So the Gemara says, that's fine, that's acceptable. Malam Bakodesh. But if you have a Shel Rosh and you want to convert it into a Shel Yad, you want to sew together the four parshas of the Shel Rosh and put them into a bias that only has one bias instead of having four sections, the Gemara calls that Moridin, that you're not permitted to do. Where exactly do you put the tefillin on? So the Gemara says that the tefillin Shel Yad have to be put on top of the muscle. If you put it on the side, you put it on the bottom, too high, too low, it's no good. It has to be B'mokim Tafuach, when the muscle is the location where the muscle sticks up. And the tefillin Shel Rosh has to be B'mokim Seir, or where the hair used to grow. If a person became bald, so you have to put the tefillin where the hair used to grow. The Gemara, in the days of the Tanoim, in the days of the Gemara, the practice was they wore tefillin all day long. And this is a big discussion in Rishonim and Achronim, a big machlokes, is this a din min haTorah, or is it only midirabbanan, that l'chatchili is supposed to wear tefillin all day long? Bizman hazeh, our practice is that we do not wear tefillin all day long. We cut down on the wearing of tefillin. We only wear the tefillin b'shas tefillah. Why? So in the Shulchan Aruch, the reason that they give is that the Gemara says tefillin tzrichin guf noki. One is only permitted to wear tefillin if he has a clean body. Clean body means both clean from hirhurim, shouldn't be thinking about improper things, and clean that the body should be clean. He shouldn't, let's say when a person has to go to the bathroom, he has to take off the tefillin. Or if a person is passing gas, he's not permitted to wear tefillin. So since tefillin need a gufnaki, and we're concerned that maybe today we're lacking in the gufnaki, maybe we all have hirhurim, so it's improper. So we have cut down on the tefillin to the bare minimum. So in the days of the Gemara, a child before bar mitzvah, we would be mechanech the children to daven and to say kriya shma and to shake a lulav and to eat matzah and to wear tefillin. A couple of years before the bar mitzvah, the child would wear tefillin. And then you look in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Baluita, no, we cut down on the tefillin by Ashkenazim. A lot of people only begin to put on tefillin the day that he comes by mitzvah. Some put on tefillin a month before, some put on 3 months before. But many have the practice only after he becomes by mitzvah. In the days of the Gemara, they would put on tefillin a couple of years before he would be by mitzvah. We want to cut down on tefillin because we're afraid that everyone may have a problem of a gufnaki. Women normally volunteer to fulfill mitzvah saseh shas mangrama. The women always volunteer to shake a lulav. They go to shul to hit kiyah shofar. They go out of their way. And tefillin, it says in Shulchan Aruch, we don't recommend not that women should volunteer, not that Ebek Naini, We're afraid everybody has a problem with a guf shein anoki. So the men have no choice. Men have to wear tefillin. So we cut it down. The men only wear tefillin during shachris, and that's it. They take it off after shachris, and whoever else is not mechuyev doesn't volunteer to wear the tefillin.
Two questions. First off, in times of the Gemara, like when they used to go to the bathroom, they just take them off.
Take it off then when they wash their body, wash their hands, they would put the tefillin back up. They would wear the tefillin all day long.
And the second thing is, like as far as like women wearing tefillin, is that whole thing with Rashi's daughters wearing tefillin, is that true or is that just a myth?
That's what they have in the history books, that Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. Yeah. The Gemara says that they were women who wore tefillin even though they weren't obligated to, they volunteered to wear tefillin. But today, the common practice is that we have cut down on the tefillin. Nobody wears the tefillin more than the bare minimum. So that's why we recommend that women shouldn't wear tefillin either. What's the story, Shabbos and Yontif? Does one wear tefillin Shabbos and Yontif? So the Gemara, in the days of the Tanaim, this was a machlokes. Some of the Tanaim used to wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yontif. Our practice is that not, and that's a question, what do you mean not? It's an Iser, it just means you're not Mechuyiv. If you don't want to, you don't have to, but there's no Iser. The Zohar says that there's an Iser. The Zohar says that one who wears tefillin on Shabbos, Yom Tov HaChalamoid, is being Mevazeh, the Kedushas HaYoyim. He's demonstrating as if the Kedushas HaYoyim is not sufficient to exempt us from tefillin. And the Gemara doesn't say like that. You look in the Gemara, the last daf in the first parak in Beitzah, it's clear from the Gemara. Tosfos points out there, and the Maharam Lublin points out the Tosfos in the back of the Gemara, on the bottom of the Marsha. Tosfos points out that Bizman Gemara, they assume that even on Shabbos and Yontif, when you're exempt, even though we follow the view that you're potter, you're exempt from wearing tefillin, but if you want to wear tefillin, it would be permissible. It's not considered an aver. Chol HaMoed is a big machlokes.
So is it okay to move your tefillin on Shabbat? Is it okay to move your tefillin on
in Shulchan Aruch, let's say by mistake someone left tefillin on a chair in shul and you want to sit down on a chair, is it permissible to move them or are they muktzeh? So the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Kar writes tefillin are not muktzeh because if you want to put it on Shabbos, you're permitted to. Then the Taz writes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, but the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Tefillin quotes from the Zohar that it's prohibited to put on tefillin on Shabbos Yom Tov. It's a bizoyon, so we should treat the tefillin as a klisha malachta le'iser. So you're only permitted to move it, l'tzorach gufo, l'tzorach makomo. L'tzorach makomo, if it's in the way, you want to sit on the chair, then the Taz says, then it would be mutta, like a hammer. Like, let's say you have a screwdriver, a hammer, a pen, a pencil, it's not muktze, it's what we call a klisha malachta l'iser. So you're only permitted to move it, l'tzorach makomo, if it's in the way, or l'tzorach gufo. Some have added on, Ravelvel and Soloveitchik added on, that if you're really choshish for the Zohar, so maybe we should treat the tefillin as muktze mamish, because it's called malachtali, so you only use tefillin for wearing them, and the Zohar says that you're not allowed to, so if you really choshish with the Zohar, maybe it should be considered mutz. But that doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Kar writes in Shulchan Aruch that it's a tefillin on Shabbos Yom Tov is a klisha malachtali heter, and the Taz just added on a chumra, you should treat it like a klisha malachtali yisr. So the tzorach makoma would be mutum. On Chol HaMoed is a famous machlekes, whether one wears tefillin or not. The Zohar says one is not permitted to wear tefillin, not on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov, not on Chol HaMoed. And that's the question, should we paskin like the Zohar or not? So the Avnei-Nezer has, Avnei-Nezer was a chassidus Rebbe, he was a super genius, all of his tshuvas are very, very sharp and learning. He's very sharp, Rabbi Soloveitchik used to enjoy very much the Avnei-Nezer. And he wrote a sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, Eglei Tal, that everybody enjoys. So the Avnei-Nezer has a very sharp tshuva where he shows that the Gemara paskins like the Zohar. He dug up a Gemara, increases Daf Tes, but the Gemara says we pass on like Reb Shimon, and he interprets in the Gemara that it's this Reb Shimon, that Chol HaMoed has a status of os, and that you're not allowed to wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. But that's a question, whether there are different opinions, whether one, the yek is wear tefillin with a bracha, except that all year long, when the Chazan puts on the tefillin, says the bracha out loud. And the Chol HaMoed, it says in Shulchan Aruch, when the Chazan puts on the tefillin, it says the bracha softly. The Taz says no. When you put on tefillin, those who wear tefillin Chol HaMoed, you put on tefillin, should not say a bracha because it's a suffix. What are you mechuyev to? And others, the Hasidim and the Vilna Goyen over here joined together, they don't wear tefillin at all Chol HaMoed based on the Zohar. Different practices. Rabbi Akiva Eger was a Misnaget, and he was a Yekin. He lived in Germany, he lived in Poznan. So in his city, they all wore tefillin with a bracha on Chol HaMoed. And he had a son-in-law, he was blessed with a son-in-law who was a Hasidish, Shmuel Birnbaum. So he had Rabbi Kivega had a grandson who was a Chassidish Rebbe, Rabbi Leibel Eger. The grandfather was turning over in his grave. So the grandson, Rabbi Leib Leiger, never knew the grandfather. So he used to correspond with his uncle, who was a Chassidish, grandson was a Chassidish Rebbe. His uncle, Rabbi Shmuel Birman, was a Chassidish fellow. So he used to correspond with him, tell me some stories, tell me something about the grandfather. So one, and they printed the letters. They found all the letters years later. So one of the letters he wrote him, that when he first visited by the in-laws on Yontif, for Chalamoid, his father-in-law, Rabbi Gregen, made him put on tefillin and shul. He was davening in shul. Everybody was wearing tefillin. Of course he made it. He says he was choking. He said, it's the first time in my life I ever put on tefillin chalmud. But he writes, his father-in-law was nice about it. He didn't force me to say a bracha. The Balabatma not going to see whether he's saying a bracha. Now everybody in shul did say a bracha. Because the yekis say a bracha on tefillin chalmud. Just the chazan doesn't say the bracha out loud. So that's what he writes. He was nice about it. The Nesivus HaMishpat was also... Yankov Melissa was contemporary of Rabbi Geveger. They lived in different countries. They used to correspond together in learning. He was also a Misnagan. He was also blessed with a Hasidish son-in-law. He also had a little friction between the father-in-law and the son-in-law. The Gemara has a machlekes hatanaim, how to read the pasuk in the middle that appears in the tefillin. V'shamarta sachuka hazos v'moadam yomim yamim. Which chuka is that referring to? So one Tana is of the opinion, it's unclear from the pasuk. One Tana is of the opinion that it's referring to Korban Pesach. Because in that parsha, Kadesh Vayaki V'Yacha, it speaks about parshas, it speaks about the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. So it means, V'shamarta sachuka hazos, you should fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, miyami yamima, once a year, every year, annually. The other Tana says, no, B'chuka satfilin akasim edabir. V'shamarta sachuka hazos, you should fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin, miyamim yamima, daily. Every day you have to wear tefillin. So the Gemara says, what's the difference? We know you have to fulfill Korban Pesach. What do you need this whole pasuk for? We know you have to fulfill Korban Pesach once a year. You know you have to wear tefillin every day. What's the difference whether this pasuk is referring to tefillin or referring to Korban Pesach? So the Gemara has a machlekes hatanaim. At night, you're not supposed to put on tefillin. So the Gemara has a machlekes hatanaim. Is that a din min haTorah, or is that only a din min haRabbanan? So one Tana says it's a din menater because the pasuk says v'shamarta sechuka hazoyis v'chuka satfilan akos medaber miyamim yamima yamim v'lo leilos. You're not allowed to put on tefillin b'layla, and miyamim v'lo kol yamim, you're not allowed to put on tefillin on Shabbos yom. It's prohibited. According to that Tana, it's a din deraisa. It's also to put on tefillin b'layla, and most of the Rishonim pasken again, the Raman pasken is like that Tana that layla loves man tefillin is a din menater. Most of the Rishonim do not accept that opinion. Most of the Shana follow the other opinion in the Tanaim. The Avshamata Chusachuka Azos Miyamim Lemoada Miyamim Yamim is referring to Chukas HaPesach, and Miyamim Yamim means annually. You should fulfill the mitzvah of Pesach once a year, every year. And there's no pasuk that says a word about not putting on tefillin b'alayla. So why did they introduce a din with the Rabbanon? So the Gemara says because Chashin Hashem Yishem Bahem. Usually people are tired at night. They were working the whole day. So we're concerned if he'll put on tefillin at night, he may fall asleep with the tefillin on. So what's the tragedy if he falls asleep? And when people sleep, sometimes they pass gas, and that's a violation of Shmiras Kedushas HaTefillin. He's being mevaza the tefillin, you need a gufnoki. So that's not permissible. What's the difference, halacha lemaisa, whether Laila loves man tefillin in HaTorah because of the pasuk miyami mamilo, or Laila loves man tefillin only mid the rabbanim because of the gzerah, Shema Yishim Bahem, Shema Yafiach Bahem. So the difference is in the Gemara and the Shulchan, the difference is, what if I already went to sleep? I already slept all I'm going to sleep for the night. I woke up in the morning and it's at 3 o'clock in the morning. This is before Alos HaShachar. Al Pidin, it's Laila. But I went to sleep at 9 o'clock at night. So I'm not going to go to sleep again. So if the prohibition of wearing tefillin by Laila is Minatorah, it's a din. So it's still Laila. But if the prohibition to wear tefillin is only midirabbanan, because of the gzeirah shem yishem bahem, shem yafiyat bahem, so there's no concern shem yishem bahem if he already had his good night's sleep and he woke up for the day, he's already dressed, and he's not going to go back to take a nap. So this was Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in his Tshuvas. He lived under the communists for quite a while until he was fortunate enough to run away to America. So he writes that the communists made them work all day. They had to work all day. They had to show up at work 3 o'clock in the morning. It wasn't possible for them to wear tefillin in the daytime. So he permitted the Balabatim to put on tefillin when they woke up 3 o'clock in the morning. He permitted them to put on tefillin and to say a bracha as well. Even though according to the Rambam, it's also to put on tefillin, and it'll be a bracha levatala. So he said, we don't pass on like the Rambam. Under normal circumstances, b'choshish for the Rambam. So if you put on tefillin at 3 o'clock in the morning, you wouldn't say a bracha. But he says, under these circumstances, what are you going to tell the Balabatim? Put on tefillin every day, 3 o'clock in the morning, don't say a bracha. He says, you tell the Balabatim to do a mitzvah, not to say a bracha. So they're going to think that the mitzvah is a weaker mitzvah, and they're going to neglect the putting on tefillin. So in order to be mechazik, the mitzvah of observance of the mitzvah of tefillin, so he took it on his responsibility. He told them they should say a bracha on it also. That's what he writes in his tshuvas. Under such difficult circumstances, you see, paskin like the Ikar Adin. The Ikar Adin is not Laila Isman Tfilin. It's only also to wear Tfilin with the Rabban Hashem Yishim Bohem, the Shema Yafich Bohem. And if you woke up in the morning after having a whole night's sleep, so then there's no Gzeir Hashem Yishim Bohem, Shema Yafich Bohem.
But just to be clear, nowadays if I woke up, if I went to sleep and woke up at like 3 in the morning, I wouldn't say bracha.
Right. Some people put on the tefillin early, but they're not allowed to say the bracha until Mishiach and Schavero. Mishiach and Schavero, Berichu Gdal Aram, is in New York, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes. I thought the same also in New York City, maybe in different parts of the globe, it's going to be a different amount of time. New York, I always thought it'd be around 30, 35 minutes before sunrise. And all the shuls, they're very makel. They allow the balabatim to say bracha 50 minutes before, 55 minutes before, more than an hour before. I don't know. To me, I think it's, I wear glasses, I can see with my glasses. I think it's pitch black. You can't see anything at night without the lampposts. So Moshe writes like that. He thinks that Mishiach HaShchaver, Berichik Dal Ramas, is 30, 35 minutes, maximum 40 minutes before sunrise. Nowhere near 55 minutes. There is a special din that appears in the Mechilta, does not appear in the Gemara, that the tefillin have to be tefillin and mezuzah have to be written kisidron in order. Shema Yisrael has to be written shin mem ayin yud shin reishon lamed. Let's say you wrote a tefillin and mezuzah and you realize you have a mistake. Instead of shema with an ayin, you made a mistake. You wrote an aleph. So fafal, you can't just erase that aleph and correct it and make an ayin, because then you have to erase the whole end of the mezuzah up until there, rewrite everything. You can't erase all the shemus later on. And the Sefer Torah, there is no such din that you'd only require Ksiva Kisidron in the Sefer Torah. If you find a mistake, wherever it happens to be, so you erase the letter that's incorrect and you replace it. You write it correctly. But in Tefillin and Mezuzah, you cannot write Shaloi Kisidron. In the Gemara, the din never appears. And Taisus on the Gemara, Menachos, but the Gemara has all the dinim of Tefillin. Taisus writes as if there is no such din as Ksiva Kisidron. So on the margin, printed on the side of the Taisus, they point this out. That maybe Tosfos assumed that the Talmud Babli doesn't hold from this din of Ksiva Kisidra, or they suggest maybe Tosfos knew of the din and they give a possible interpretation of Tosfos. Whatever it is, the din is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. We assume in Shulchan Aruch that tefillin has to be Ksiva Kisidra. The parshas have to be written in order. What is the order? So the order is Kadesh Oyer Kiviyachos Shema V'Hayoyim Shema. That's the order that it appears in Chumash. Yeah. What's the order that you have the parshiyos in the batim? So that's a famous machlekes Rashi and the Rabbein Tam. The Gemara tells you that the parshiyos and the shalrosh have to be in a specific order, and if it's in the incorrect order, the tefillin apostle. So what is the correct order? So the Gemara gives you what the order is, but it's unclear how to read the Gemara. So Rashi read it one way, and the Rabbein Tam read the Gemara differently. It's a pella. That's what everybody. How can there be a machlekes Rashi and Rabbein Tam? Rabbein Tam is Rashi's grandson. What kind of tefillin did they wear before the days of the Rabbeinu Tam? Everybody wore Rashi's? Or half the people wore Rabbeinu Tam's? What was going on? It's a pella in history. How can it be a machlekes? Like, the Rishonim all ask, how can it be a machlekes? How are you supposed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Were you supposed to blow tkiyah, shvarim, tkiyah, a tkiyah, true tkiyah, a tkiyah, shvarim, true tkiyah? How can you have a machlekes? What did they do last year? It's a pella. So some suggest, Rabbi Mendel Kasha has a long essay on this and this. Chumash Torah Shlema. Torah Shlema is a very valuable set. So as long as he suggests that maybe this din that you need, the specific Seder for the Parshios and the Shalrosh, maybe this din is a din with the Rabbanans. And maybe in the earlier generations, before the days of the Tanaim, they had like this and they had like that. There are two kinds of tefillin. They're both acceptable. In the Torah, everything is good. And maybe this whole requirement that the parshas have to be placed in a specific order, maybe this was a chumrah midrabban that was instituted bizman ha-tanoim. And because they were old tefillin, both kinds of old tefillin, so that's why there was a suffix later on, which is the correct order. So lemaisa, we have two kinds. You have tefillin derash and tefillin derabbein atam. The Shulchan Aruch says that one who's medaktik and mitzvahs, one is known as a medaktik and mitzvahs, should wear both Rashi and Rabbein and Tam's tefillin because of the suffix, which is the correct form of the tefillin.
Even though the tefillin shel Rosh is four separate parshios, four separate pieces, so that the sofer spells right each, like, you know, that's right, first parsha and then the second parsha, even though they're on separate cloths.
Yeah, we're machmir on that also. Even though there are four different pieces of parchment, you should still write in order. Yeah. The Gemara has a braisa that the tefillin shel Rosh has to be me'or echad. How do you translate me'or echad? What does that mean? So there's a big machlokes in the Rishonim over there. So some say all it means is that there should be one bias, that's all. Just like Shal Yad is one bias, so the Shal Rosh, you have to have four different compartments, each one of the four parshios, but the four compartments should be one square bias, Me'orechot, one bias. If you have different pieces of leather and you patch them together and you glue them together, that's acceptable. And other Rishonim say no, that Chibur Ayidei Devek, if you glue together different pieces of leather, that's not acceptable. Me'or echad means literally me'or echad. It has to be one piece of leather stretched out. So that's now a business or a racket, whatever you call it. They make tefillin shel Rosh me'or echad. They're machmir to use one piece of leather that's stretched out. So when if you have me'or echad, you'll see on the mabarto of the shel Rosh in the back where the ritzua goes through, you see that there are creases there. There are going to be wrinkles there. Because it started off as one piece of leather, and then you stretched it out to make the four sections. So if it's one piece of leather, you're going to have folds in the leather. So that's a simon that it's miyorecha. That's considered a hidur, because there are those who hold that it's possible otherwise. The script has to be ksav ashuris. The script has to be ksav ashuris, and then there are three different forms of ksav ashuris. So there's ksav bes yosef, and then there's ksav ari, and then there's ksav velish. So there are those Sfardim who insist on having Ksav Elish. Ksav Elish has a shin, has a flat line on the bottom. Everyone else, who are not from those, I think the Temanim have Ksav Elish, I'm not sure. Everyone else assumes, like the Prima Godim, that if you have a shin with a bar on the bottom, it's puzzle. The shin has to come to a point on the bottom. Both Ksav Besyesev and Ksav Ari. So that's one of the distinguishing features of Ksav Elish is that the shin has a bar on the bottom, like in a printed shin. The main difference between Ksav Beseis and Ksav Ari is the Tzuras Ois of the Tzadik. There are a couple of other differences as well, but the Tzuras Ois of the Tzadik. The Tzadik is supposed to have two heads on top, two yuds, and then it has one neck, and then it has a base on the bottom. So the question is, how do you write the two Tzadiks? Do we have any chalk here, huh? This is according to the Ksav Beis Yosef, that the necks of the two tzadik are like two heads with two necks facing the same direction. The necks are like that. If you ever look, the emblem of the NCSY is the Ksav Ari tzadik. That goes like this. The two necks are next to each other, so as if this head is looking in this direction, and this head with this neck is looking in the opposite direction. And this is the discrepancy between the two Tzuras Ois of the Tzadik, is based on a contradiction between two passages in the Zohar. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon, so the Gemara says, and the Zohar says, that he created two Partzufin. He had two heads, and the two heads were connected together on one body. And later when he separated Chava from Adam, so there already was the parts of Chava. So there's a contradiction in between the two passages in the Zohar. When Adam HaRishon with Chava had the two heads together, were they facing in the same direction or were they facing in two opposite directions? So it's basically a psychological machlekes, whether the basic nature of man is that everyone is pulling in an opposite direction, even Koidem Achet, even before they sinned in Gan Eden. Oh no, Koidem Achet, everyone was looking, facing in the same direction. And after the chet, then everybody's out for himself. Sinners are always out for themselves. So that's the question. The tzaddik in the Sefer Torah, Tefillah Mezuzah, should be written the way it should be, the ideal tzaddik. It should be written the way it was Kodem Achet. So that's the question, what's the correct way? There were Rabbonim in Europe who would passel Sefer Torah if it had the Ksav Ari tzaddik. There were Rabbonim who insisted on changing all the tzaddiks in the Sefer Torah. So most of the Rabbonim did not insist on that because b'di'evit we rely on the Rambam and the Tshuva. The Rambam writes in the Tshuva that the Minig was b'chol arei svara that the yistalein kriyas haTorah from apostle of Sefer Torah, the yistalein bal peh. So although the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah writes that you cannot lein from apostle of Sefer Torah, kriyas haTorah has to be from a kosher Sefer Torah, that's how we paskin. But b'di'evit, Rabbi Yosef Kar quotes from Maria Buav, that b'di'evit, let's say you read in a kriyas haTorah in the middle, you find that there's a psul in the Sefer Torah, so the Beis Yosef quotes Maria Buav, you don't have to lein over again everything that you lain b'psul, but the yevid we rely on the Tshuvas HaRambam. So since it's not so clear what's the correct surasois of the tzaddik, and but the yevid you would be yotzei, so that's why most Rabbanim didn't make such a big fuss about the Sifrei Torah if they had the Ksav Ari. The main difference was the tzaddik, and maybe the tzaddik is kosher but the yevid, and maybe even apostle of Sefer Torah, also you can say brocha if you get an Ali and apostle of Sefer Torah. But in Tefillin and Mezuzah, that's a bigger problem. If it's possible, it's possible. There is no shita that you can say broch an apostle at Tefillin and apostle and Mezuzah. But that's what the Chazon Ish was the one who made a big fuss. But before the Chazon Ish also, many said that one should be very careful not to use Ksav Ari. Okay, except for those, let's say, Lubavitch always use Ksav Ari. They insist on Davka using Ksav Ari. The Gemara says the Kesher Shal Tefillin is Halacha Moshe Misina. What exactly does that mean? So that's a famous Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos in Brochas Davok. Rashi's opinion is that the Kesher that the Shal Yad has to have a Tzura V'Yud, and the Kesher Shal Rosh has to be a Dalet, and then you have the Shin on the Bayis. So all three together spell Shin Dalet Yud. The Shin is written on the Bayis. The Dalet is the Kesher Shal Rosh, and the Yud is the Kesher Shal Yad, and that spells out Shem Hashem. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi based on Gemara. They say, no, Kesher Shal Tefillin Halacha Moshe Misina, that there should be a Kesher. Kesher Agabi Kesher. Aniva is not a Kesher, should be a Kesher Agabi Kesher. But the Tzuras HaOis, that should have, this should be Betzuras Dal, and that should be Betzuras Yud. Tosfos thinks that that's not part of the Halacha Moshe Misina. According to Rashi, it is. According to Rashi, the Tzuras HaDal is part of the Halacha Moshe Misina. So that's a big problem. Most people, when they have a Kesher Shal Rosh, it doesn't look like a Dalet at all. It's in a square shape. So the Rambam writes that the Kesher of the Shal Rosh is ribua, is a square. So Pashu Pshat, the Rambam means that it's a square. So others insist, no, the Rambam meant that it should be a Dalet, but ribua means that the width on the top bar of the Dalet should be the same length as the height of the Dalet. But he didn't mean that it should be a square ribua, he meant it should be a Dalet. So that's a big issue. So there are those who passed all the tefillin. Most of the people who have Kesher Shal Rosh, it's in the shape of a square. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik used to be here in the yeshiva. When my father came from Europe, so he came with a normal pair of tefillin. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik insisted everybody has to change the Kesher. Rav Soloveitchik from Boston, his son, also insisted, you got to change the tefillin. You got to make a dalet. You can't use a square. Others point out that this whole practice of insisting on a dalet as opposed to a square, how can you say that apostles b'di'evit, it was only introduced in the 1700s. For centuries, they never had like that. In fact, the Rishonim who write, they describe exactly step by step how to tie the kesher. So if you go slowly and carefully and you follow the instructions, it's always going to come out to be a square. It's not going to come out to be a dalet. It's hard to say that it should passel b'di'evit. That's what the Titaliyaz has. It should be hard to say that the tefillin are passel b'di'evit if it's in a square. That's the way the Jews always did for centuries. Maybe it's a heder. Others think it's not a heder. Others think it's more mahuda to do it the way we were doing it for centuries. But here in the yeshiva, that's more or less the tradition, because Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and his son Rav Soloveitchik from Boston, they insisted everybody should make a dalet.
In which communities would have a square?
Almost everybody has a square.
And where's the dalet?
Very few. They say over here, Rabbi Breuer died at the age of 98. So I think 2 years before he died, he changed his tefillin from a square to a dalet. Remember, I was once davening in the shul, so someone noticed that I had a dalet. So they said, that's not the way it's supposed to be. So I said, well, they told me Rabbi Breuer. So they said, when you'll reach the age of 96, then you, till the age of 96, you don't do that. I don't know exactly what they understood. The Gemara has a whole discussion. He's supposed to put the tefillin shel yad on the left arm. What if the person is a lefty? So the Gemara says you put it on the right arm. There seem to be, the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch assumes that the Gemara is a little unclear in Menachos when they talk about left arm, right arm. The Vilna Gaon thinks that there are three opinions in the Tanoim, exactly what the din is. So he claims that one opinion is you always put on the left arm, whether you're righty or lefty, you always put on the left arm. Second opinion of the Gemara is you always put on the arm that doesn't do the writing. If you write with the right arm, it says, the same hand that does the writing should do the hiduk on the tefillin. So if you are a righty in writing, then you put tefillin on your left arm. If you're a lefty in writing, everything depends on writing, then you put tefillin on the right arm. And the third opinion in the Gemara is that it says, so we darshan that as if it's read Yad Keho, the weaker of the two hands. So let's say the person always writes with the left hand, but when he throws a ball, he throws with the right hand. When he punches somebody, he punches with the right hand. When he bats with the right hand. Everything else he does with the right hand. Only thing that he does with the left hand is writing. So the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch Paskins, everything depends on writing. And most of the Paskim disagree with that Ramah. They say no, that if a person is ambidextrous, he writes with both hands, and the Gemara says he puts the tefillin on the left arm. So what if the person always writes with his left arm, but the right hand is really stronger? For all other intents and purposes, the right hand is strong. So the Ramah Paskins that you follow Ksiva. And many others say no, that in such a case, since he uses both arms, this arm for throwing and this arm for writing, you treat him like a shorlet b'shtei yodov, like an ambidextrous person, and you should put tefillin on his left arm. It's a big machlokes. The Mishkan is Yankee. Rabbi Soloveitchik had the problem because he was ambidextrous, and what else? I forgot already. Everything by him was complicated. He said when he used to drive a car, so he didn't. When they told him to turn right or turn left, he wouldn't remember which way is right or left. So he always had it dropped up both hands. And figure out which hand is stronger, because it was so complicated. Yeah, I remember he used to write on the blackboard in the middle of class. So he would start writing over here, and then in the middle he would change it. The students were looking. We never saw such a thing before. Sometimes he would know. There was a student. One of the students would write with both hands at the same time. He used to have a professor here who taught mathematics. So he used to write with both hands at the same time. That was shtick, because he remembered when Rabbi Soloveitchik used to write. Switched the chalk from the right hand to the left hand, so this professor wanted to do his shtick. He wrote with both hands at the same time. That's a bigger, complicated shtick. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said that his father said, we follow the Mishkanes Yankim. Mishkanes Yankim writes, according to the Vilna Gaon, there are three opinions. In the Tanoim, one opinion is you always put on the left hand whatever. One opinion is what the Ramah writes, it always depends on which hand does the writing. And the third opinion is it depends which hand is strongest. So he said the Mishkanes Yankim Paskins. Mishkanes Yankim was a student of Rav Chaim Volozhin, learned in Volozhin Yeshiva. So he Paskins that you should always follow the two out of the three opinions of the Tanoim. You should follow the Rova of the Tanoim. The Gemara has a din that Ovel Yom Rishon, when a relative dies, so before the Kvura, the Oinen is not permitted to fulfill any mitzvah. So he doesn't daven and he doesn't wear tefillin and he doesn't wear a talis, he doesn't do any mitzvahs. Not allowed to say any brochas. After the Kvuras Hameis, then the Oval starts observing Shiva. So the first day, let's say they did the Kvuras Hameis 12 o'clock in the afternoon. So that afternoon, when he davens mincha, so he should put on a talis. And the generally accepted opinion is what it says in the Gemara, Oval Yom Rishon, Eina Minich Tefillin. Does not wear tefillin. The Rama quotes, there was an opinion in the days of the Gaonim that he only doesn't wear tefillin shel rosh, but tefillin shel yad he does wear. And the Rambam says that's not the commonly accepted opinion. The accepted opinion is doesn't wear neither tefillin shel yad nor tefillin shel rosh. It's based on the pasuk in Yecheskel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yecheskel the nevuah that the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed and he should start and he gave him a nevuah that his wife is going to die. So based on the nevuah, his wife didn't die, it was a nevuah, his wife is going to die, and Yecheskel HaNavi was told to observe imitation of Avelis because of the dream that he had, because of the nevuah, his wife is going to die. So some of the laws of Avelis he was told to observe, and others he was told not to observe because his wife didn't really die. So he was told, Perecha Chavoy Shalecha, you should wear your tefillin. So you see from that pasuk that a normal person is really an Avelis, does not wear tefillin. So the Goyim were of the opinion that Pe'er only refers to the tefillin Shal Rosh, which is Megula. The tefillin Shal Yad is not Megula. So tefillin Shal Yad, the Oval would wear. But that's not the accepted opinion. The accepted opinion is that the Oval, Yom Rishon, doesn't wear tefillin, neither tefillin Shal Yad, nor tefillin Shal Rosh. There is a notion in Achronim and in Rishonim. Many Achronim are of the opinion that the Oval Yom Rishon doesn't wear tefillin. It's only if the Yom HaMisa B'Hakvur is on the same day. If the person died today and it was buried on the same day, and the Shiva begins late in the afternoon. That's unusual. Usually by us, till you notify all the relatives. So the Yom HaMisa was yesterday and the Yom HaKvur is today. It's not going to be the same day. But there is such an opinion that the Oval Yom Rishon Einam Nech Tefillin is only if the Yom HaRishon is both the Yom HaMisa B'HaKvur. Many communities follow that psak, but that's not the generally accepted psak. The more correct is that the Oval Yom Rishon, even though it's not Yom HaMisa B'HaKvura, it's not proper shetaka and not wear tefillin. There is an issue regarding the shin shel tefillin. Gemara only talks about one shin, and our practice is we have two shins, one on the right side, one on the left side. So we have, based on the Zohar, the two shins. One shin has Dalet Roshin and one shin has Gimel Roshin. Mazeh, what is the shin with the Dalet Roshin all about? So the Beis Yosef has two versions as to what that's all about. So one version has it that there are two legitimate ways to write a shin. You can either write a shin, a normal shin, something like this. Normal shin is like this. And then the Zohar says that that's also acceptable. The shin with four Russian is also acceptable. Let's say you have a Sefer Torah, and it has, every so often, has a shin with four Russian. So Rabbi Kevega says, according to that Zohar, that would be good. Then the Beis Yosef quotes another opinion. No, it's not that there are two versions of a shin. The shin only has Gimel Roshin. But the shin on the outside of the bayis that has four Roshin, the two in the middle are not supposed to be touching the bottom. Only the one on the right side, one on the left side should touch. So basically what you have is a shin of Gimel Roshin, but the Shakua. The shin is not bolet. This is the shin. And it goes down over here. So the shin only has Gimel Roshin, but instead of being a shin bole, it's the shkia, the shakua, the indentation. Is that why do you make two shins, one bole and one shakua? So the Beis Yosef explains why. That Kodemat and Torah, Kodemat and Hasinai, so where do they have tzav? So the Aseres Adibus were engraved on the Luchas. Then later, years later, they have a Sefer Torah with the Lo'osius being written on the cloth. So the Ksav of the Luchas was Shakua. It was engraved in the Luchas. So we want to have two shins on the Shal Rosh, one shin like Kodem Matan Torah, like the Luchas, that is Shakua, and one shin from the Echte Matan Torah, a shin of Ksav. So the one of the Dalet Roshin is basically a shin of Gimel Roshin, but it's a Ksav that Shakua. But most do not have that practice. Most have the practice of the shin of Dalet Roshin, the two middle Roshin do touch the bottom. It's not that the Bedavke don't touch the bottom, it's really a shin shaku of Gimel Roshin. The Gemara says that Rav had a lot of Midas Chassidus, and one of his Midas Chassidus was he wouldn't walk Dalet Rams below Torah or below Tefillin. The Gaonim have in the collection of Tshuva Sagam, they have a Tshuva where they write, they were Esemili the Chassidus of Rav. Rav had 10. Midas Chassidus. So it's a brief Tshuvas HaGadim, only has 10 lines, and he lists off all of the Mili de Chassidus of Rav. And there was the famous Radzina Rebbe, Rabbi Yerucham Leiner. He was the one who claimed that he discovered the Tchelus. He traveled to Italy to see the aquarium, to study all the different fish. in the Mediterranean, he decided which one he thought was the Tchelis, and he had tens of thousands of people before the Second World War were wearing his Tchelis. He had a factory in Radzin. When the Nazis bombed Poland, and Galicia said there's no more factory, but now they made a factory in Eretz Yisrael, and they still produce the Tchelis the way he did. So this Radzina Rebbe wrote quite a few Svarim and learning. And then in addition, he wrote a whole little pamphlet commenting on this 10-line tshuva of the Goyim, the Esemili, the Chassidus of Rav. And this is one of the Midas Chassidus that we have in the Gemara explicitly. Rav wouldn't walk the Alanamas, beloy Torah, beloy Tfilin. He always wore Tfilin all day long. As I said before, we don't have that practice. We're concerned about the Guf Noki, so we don't do that anymore. Okay, very good. Have a nice day. Thank you.